Live from the Findlay Toyota Studios, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
It is Cofield and Company kicking off the week. Big week here in Las Vegas as the Raiders strapped on the pads. The Aces are getting into the thick of things. They got a big game tomorrow night in Los Angeles as Cam Brink makes her return. Everything's getting pumped up. UNLV football, probably touch on that tomorrow with Danny Smythe, Cofield and Company. It is Willie Ramirez along with Greg Salerno and Griffin running the show. Quarterbacking things is the appropriate word this week. It is National Hamburger Day. We've been asking all of our guests. By the way, I did check in with Taylor Rocha because we forgot to ask her.
Yes.
We wanted to get her introduction and sort of meet and greet her with our listeners. She said because she cannot eat dairy or gluten, she would have been sounded very boring. So it's a good thing that we didn't ask her what her choice is. So, Greg, I'm going to ask you. Griffin, I'm going to ask you. Build your perfect burger.
All right. Burger meat, medium, not medium rare, not medium well, just medium.
Yeah.
Going American cheese.
Yeah.
I'm going ketchup and mayo.
Yeah.
And I'm going, for my bread, a salted bagel.
Nice. Nice.
Cut it down the middle, man. Kind of eat two halves of it.
Little bagel burger.
Yeah. Oh, I love them.
A bagel burger.
So good.
Griff?
Well, now he's got me thinking because you're going to throw a curveball like using a bagel for a burger. I gotta be creative.
Doesn't
here.
Make you have to change yours.
Griff, don't hurt yourself with thinking things. Let's go. don't hurt yourself thinking.
All right, give me some Angus beef patty, coarse medium, medium rare. Either one's good for me. Brioche bun, just because I think it's fancy. Little mustard, little ketchup, lettuce, tomato, bacon on there, of course. And you know what? Two patties, actually. Correct myself. Two patties, two things of cheese, and the works. That's good for me.
All right. I am going with the cattle company up in North Dakota that sends me beef. I'm using theirs, and it's their organ blend, where so you get, like, the organs are ground into it, and it's a very fine and lean. So it's got to be a healthy, lean
right.
meat.
By organs, you mean, like, hearts and stuff?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And it's tasty. Medium. Toward medium well, but still maybe a touch of pink. I want lettuce. I want tomato. I want bacon. But here's the thing. I can't remember earlier, or we were talking about the double patties and everything. I'm just going to make a half pound raw and then whatever it cooks down to. If I'm not doing sesame seed bun, I'm going to use pita bread because it's what my grandfather used to make for me when we watched Monday Night Football and listened to Howard Cosell and Dandy Don and Frank Gifford back in the day. American cheese for sure, but for my sauce, I'm going to actually make the sauce with some ketchup, some mayo, some mustard, relish, whip it all together, and then put it on there and I think that's what I'm going to have because I'm cutting and I have plenty of room left on my caloric intake for today, so I think that's what I'm making for National Hamburger Day. But right now, we are going to bring in our guy from Raider Nation Radio and the boss, and we're going to find out what he builds his perfect burger. Q Myers just got done on Raider Nation Radio and now is joining us to talk Raiders. But Q, it's National Hamburger Day and we need you to build your perfect burger for us.
Yeah, you guys are fancy, man. Thanks for having me on the show. I mean, here.
Wait a minute.
Descriptions,
wait
man.
A minute. I've got to cut you off when you say fancy. I stood up for you when those clowns early in the morning on the National were dogging you for. They said, what is Q talking about? His perfect dinner out is steak and lobster mac and cheese. Don't make it sound like you're not fancy, bro.
Oh, no, I'm definitely fancy, but, I mean, you guys are talking about a burger. Yeah, I mean, we're talking about dinner. I'm talking about a bone-in ribeye and lobster mac and cheese. And, yeah, I mean, it's going down, right? I could definitely get fancy. Even the wife calls me bougie at times. I could take that, but you guys are talking about a burger, so I feel pretty basic. I'm like Griffin, man. You guys started talking about different burgers, and he was like, man, I feel like I got to change the game up a little bit. I almost feel like him, but I'm just going to go with a typical sesame seed bun, right? Toasted, obviously. I want some Swiss cheese on that bad boy. I want ketchup and mayo. I'm like Salerno with that one. Got to have some bacon on it. Got to have some thick-cut bacon, too, man.
Nice.
Because everyone loves bacon. And, either give me a fat burger, like a fat actual burger, not the company, not the place, but like
right.
a big, thick patty, or give me a couple of them. And, medium, medium, medium well. I think it's good. I don't like to see my burger bleeding, but, you know, I like medium rare when it comes to my steaks, but that's just how we roll. So, yeah, I mean, I think I'm pretty basic when it comes to that.
It sounds really good. I want to bring up a general Raiders question before we get into the details here, because we have a question about perception. We were talking about this earlier. I look at, like, a lot of the, you know, the things coming out, how divisions are going to finish, and the AFC West to me is crazy because you look at the Raiders, they bring in a Hall of Fame coach, they bring in Chip Kelly, who's a proven offensive coordinator, they upgrade at running back, they upgrade at quarterback. I mean, the defense, you know, they have the thing going on with Wilkins, but otherwise, looks like they're doing well. Why is the teams like the Chargers, for instance, who haven't been relevant since they fired Marty Schottenheimer, seen as like a contender, but somehow the Raiders have this huge gap between the other teams? I just don't get it.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, man, and I've been very critical of the Chargers, and especially Justin Herbert, because I think he's very talented.
Right.
He's got all the arm strength. You know, he was obviously touted to be a fantastic franchise quarterback coming out of Oregon, and I think that he has the skill set, but we haven't seen him win anything that was significant. We saw him in the playoffs last throw options. We saw him have a 27-0 lead and lose it to the Jaguars. And I'm not trying to say that that's all on him.
Right.
But at the end of the day, quarterbacks, especially after they get paid, the expectations are for them to take that next step. And then we hear their head coach Jim Harbaugh come out not too long ago and say, well, it's not Justin's fault. It's everyone around him. So now it's like, okay, one, if I'm in that locker room, I'm like, thanks, coach.
Right.
Thanks for throwing us under the bus. But okay. So I'm interested to see what it looks like. But I think that he has a lot to prove himself. And I think that, you know, Jim Harbaugh has a lot to prove as well. I mean, he was looked at as the savior when he arrived with the Chargers, that he's going to get them to the next level. And, you know, job well done getting them to the playoffs in year one. But, okay, so what do you do as an encore performance? What comes next? So I think that the Chargers take a slight step back defensively this year, and I don't know if that's going to be enough to make them miss the playoffs. But it should be intriguing, man. I mean, 3 out of 4 teams made the playoffs last year, and obviously the Raiders were not one of them. So just with that being said, I mean, the road to get to double-digit wins is going to be difficult for them. But, I mean, they do obviously have an opportunity to be really good, but they've got 3 other teams that are going to, you know, argue that as well.
Day 5 of training camp, but the first day in pads. A lot of excitement building up to this. I was listening to the boys this morning on Raider Nation Radio, and they were live out there. So
yeah,
you could hear the yelling and the scream. The one thing that I got a kick out of, Vinny Sapp said that as they lined up, the defensive lineman, the first one out the gate is Max Crosby, and so a coach has to hold the pad, and then each lineman gets in line and holds the pad.
Yep.
That apparently that coach basically ate Max Crosby. It was, I mean, he Max Crosby just took him out. And it was a handful. Did you happen to see that?
I did. I saw when it happened. I go, oh, that probably is not what the coach expected on that one. I mean, now they did land on, you know, on a big pad and a big cushion,
right,
so
right.
It's okay. But yeah, man, I wouldn't want to be that coach that I have to take on Max Crosby on the first play. Max was real cool after it happened. He like grabbed him and made sure he was okay. And the coach was kind of laughing, had to put his hat back on because, as you can imagine, Max knocked his hat off. So that was pretty funny. But yeah, man, Max is still Max, and he's going 100 miles an hour. He's wrecking practice. And the thing is, he was wrecking practice last year in Costa Mesa,
right,
but it was different. It was almost like he was wrecking practice so bad, like they couldn't get real work done. This is one of those almost, you know, like controlled rages or controlled dominance where they're still getting a lot of good work in, but he's still Max Crosby and he's still dominating.
So first day on the pads, two-part question. First of all, your take just on overall what you saw, who excited you. I know I had a couple of people check in and tell me who they thought. And then part two, did Ashton Jeanty once again live up to his billing?
Yeah, Ashton Jeanty, that's an easy one. He seems like he's always going to live up to the billing. He's fun to watch. You know, with pads on, you saw the offensive line open up a couple holes, and he had the 20-25-yard gains. You know, just, again, he just gets through there so quickly, and he's just a dominant force, man. So, yeah, Ashton's fun. But I'll tell you, man, the running back room in general, to me, looked good. Mostert looks good. Sincere McCormick is back healthy. Zamir White is trimmed up a little bit, so he's not as built. You know, he looked like a Greek god last year. But I think he was too big, right? I'll have an old school reference for you, and you'll probably appreciate this one. He almost was David Boston like last year.
Oh, man.
Remember David Boston when he got really big and
biceps?
It was like, dude, you're too big. I feel like that's what happened with Zamir White last year. So he looks a lot thinner. Still looks like he's in good shape, but he looks a lot thinner, and he's quick, and so all those guys I think look good in that running back room. So that's going to be a good battle. Obviously, you know that Gentry's running back one, and Mostert's running back two, but Sincere McCormick or Zamir White, like I don't see both those guys making the team. So which one's it going to be? Who's going to hold that spot down? That's fun. So I've been watching that, and then the defense, man, they've had such an emphasis on getting the ball and taking the ball away. Like you saw DeCam Richardson today intercept Geno Smith in the end zone. And it's just they're focused on the ball so much. And last year they only had as a team 10 interceptions, and that's just not going to cut it. So I'm interested to see how the cornerbacks or the secondary in general really work and together and how they build, because they need to find a way to be very Seahawk-like, where they look for the ball and they get it back for the offense on short fields. And I do think that they'll have way more than 10 interceptions this year, just because, again, Pete Carroll has said that, you know, the ball is so important and they have that emphasis. And then Ja'Cory, right? I mean, the guy was a really good corner last year until he got hurt and ended up on IR. He's running with the twos and threes. Like, he ran some time with the threes today. He ran with the twos today. And that's kind of surprising, but he also doesn't fit the size of a prototypical Pete Carroll defensive back. So, you know, we kind of look at him and say, all right, is he going to earn that starting spot? Is he going to be a number two? What is Ja'Cory Bennett going to be? So really just the competition, that quarterback room and the running back room, is fun to watch.
Talking to Q Myers from Raider Nation Radio, 920 AM, ESPN National, and our fearless leader. I wanted to ask you about this story. Now, we were talking to Taylor Rocha earlier about this Christian Wilkins story.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, there was other things that happened before this that, you know, led up to this. It wasn't just one incident, but I didn't know this until she said it today, that apparently he might have kissed another player during a meeting. What are you hearing about this? And, you know, we were talking about this in locker rooms. That kind of stuff does not go over well. What are you hearing from the team about this?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not hearing anything from the team, but just kind of the slow drip process of the information that's leaking out, and the whole kiss the player on the forehead, whatever that scenario was. I heard that earlier today from Schefter when he was a part of the Pat McAfee show. So, you know, I'm sure that there's more to it. I'm sure that it's not just a simple kiss. You know, I've heard from other people that this is kind of things that he's done before, and it sounds like whatever player or players that didn't like it really didn't like it, and it got to HR, and they, you know, they made the appropriate moves after that. So I think, to me, it's going to be a situation where it's probably going to get uglier before it gets better. And what I mean by ugly is not necessarily with the players in the locker room on the team. It's just the words are, and whatever the, you know, however they describe whatever situation happened, that they felt they had to move on from them. I think that's going to start to play out. Like I said, I feel like it's going to be in a slow drip process, though. So we're going to hear, okay, it's a kiss today. Then tomorrow maybe it's something else. Then maybe next week it's something else. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
I don't think we're going to get the full meal deal thing at one time, which I kind of wish that's what it would be, is a full meal deal, so they could just get it out there,
sure,
get it over with, and move on. But to me, I feel like this is going to be a slow drip.
Well, considering the fact that he filed a grievance, right, mm-hmm, with the Players Association against the league or against the team, it would behoove the team to get it out there, because one thing also that Taylor said was there may be pictures that are surfacing on social media, like in a friendly manner in public, that he kissed Max Crosby, like they were out in public, an event. And here's the thing. She brought up a good point in that, you know, if a man did that to a woman, right, we know some of the women PR staff. Let's just use that as an example only. And a media member or a player did that and made them feel uncomfortable, there's really no difference. And when you're talking about, as I pointed out, a room full of grown men with revved up testosterone that are professional football players, I don't say this, and I'm not calling anybody this, but it and I don't want to make it seem in a homophobic way, but hey, if you're not gay and another man kisses you, it makes you feel uncomfortable, you have every right to go to home to HR and say, hey, I'm uncomfortable with this taking place. This is becoming part of the norm. And if this is something that was going on, the Raiders, it would behoove them to get it all out there, as you say, or as you call it, a full meal deal.
Yeah, exactly. I'm with you 100%. And I remember being at the Aces game when Christian Wilkins first joined the team, and he was sitting there next to Max Crosby. And you know how whenever someone's sitting courtside, the camera's always on them, and they welcome, hey, welcome in from the Raiders, Max Crosby and Christian Wilkins. And Christian went over and immediately kissed Max on the cheek. I remember when that happened, right? But I don't know if that was – you know, something that happened in this scenario. I don't know if that's a big deal. I don't know. It's not for me to judge if it's a big deal or not. It's for whoever, you know, he either approached or did this to or whatever. And if it's just that or if it's not more, I mean, who knows? So, again, I think that a lot of this is going to come out, but I think it's going to be the slow drip as opposed to just letting it all get out and then get ahead of it and move on. I'm glad it happened early,
yes. You
know, after a couple practices and that's it, so they could at least – you know, okay, we understand that we don't have him on the team, so they move forward without him. They got a very deep defensive tackle room. Young man from here, Jonah Laulu, excited about him and his opportunity. Plus the rest of the guys in that room, they know that, hey, we're not going to have Christian. Someone's going to have to step up. Why not let it be me?
And that's where I'm moving on to. Q Myers joining us from Raider Nation Radio. We just got off the air and kind enough to join us to talk Raiders. Patrick Graham spoke about him yesterday. Now, you spoke to Jonah on day two of camp. I had a chance to listen to that audio. But this is what Patrick Graham had to say about Jonah.
See the smile on my face. Jonah, I just remember when he came for the local pro day. And, you know, he did a good job over there, the local pro day. Then, you know, he got drafted by Indianapolis, got cut. We got him. And I just saw a raw player with a lot of the physical traits that you want at the position. And so when you have those traits and then you combine that with the work ethic he has, and I would say the coaching he's getting from the position coaches, the coaching he's getting from the players, the examples like Max, like Adam Butler, he's trending the right way. He's still a young player. Not that that matters. He's a technician, he's physical, he's smart, and he's accountable. A lot of the things we're looking for.
He's trending the right way. Q, when I listened to the interview you did with him on day two of camp, the enthusiasm that this kid spoke of, and when you told him what Max had to say, he said, I'm ready to die for my brothers in the room.
Yep. Yeah, that was exciting, man. I mean, I got fired up just talking to him after day two. And, you know, hearing what Patrick Graham, the way that he broke it down when it comes to Jonah, you see he spent plenty of time talking about him. And he did have a smile on his face when he was talking about him. Max gave him a lot of props and a lot of credit when he, you know, said that he's good and he doesn't even know how good he is yet. Right. I mean, that's really good. And I think that this guy has an opportunity to be special. He's a guy that makes it easy to root for. Just listening to the interview I did with him about 4 or 5 minutes, he's easy to root for just because you know he's about his business. He's trying to do it right. He's a local kid that loves being in front of his family and friends, and so that's exciting as well. And he's got an opportunity, right? And he went in last year and he, you know, played a significant role with Adam Butler, with Christian Wilkins down. So they're gonna have to do that again, right? I mean, again, they only had him for 5 games last year, so it's not like they've haven't played without him before. They're gonna have to learn how to play without him again. And, you know, someone's going to have to step up. They got Butler. They got Laulu. They got Fotu. They got Hemingway and Pegues that they drafted. Booker that they signed. Coburn that they just, you know, picked up off waivers. Carter's there. May's there. There's a lot of guys in that room. You know, I know that Wilkins is a big-time talented player, but, you know, outside of all those guys, they could be someone who steps up, or it could be a collection of multiple guys.
Q, while we still have you on the phone, I have to ask you about Eric Allen, E. Allen, in just a few days. Going to be going into the Hall of Fame or have the ceremony. As an Eagles fan, I can't believe that he wasn't in there already. But can you talk a little bit? I know you have a relationship with Eric. Can you talk a little bit about that and what it means to him going in finally?
Yeah, man, I'm excited for EA. I really am upset at the NFL. I normally would be going to the Pro Football Hall of Fame, but the way that they did it this year, for some reason the NFL didn't have – anything to do with it, which is strange because it's the Pro Football Hall of Fame. But normally they have the credentials set out, and I would already have my room booked, my flights booked, everything. And I got an email from them last week saying, yeah, we're not involved in it this year, and so it's really too late now for me to get anything going. I wanted to see EA go in because it's something that he's been really, you know, wanting to happen for his career, just to kind of to put a cap on his career and become a member of a very exclusive club. And this guy has over 50 career interceptions. The guy was always a technician when it comes to playing the defensive back role. And the fact that he studied so much film, and, you know, he would go into to the summer, and he would emulate whatever wide receiver was the best wide receiver at that time, and he would basically run their routes. And that's how he learned how to anticipate what was coming and how to be able to jump routes. And the thing about EA, and, you know, there's some corners, like I'll just use, like, Jack Jones, for example, from the Raiders last year.
Yeah.
He did a lot of guessing. And every once in a while, he guesses and is right. And he'll come up with the ball. It's like, oh, man, Jack Jones is fantastic. And I'm not going to lie. I was excited about what he was going to bring to the table. We saw him in, you know, a small capacity in 2023 when the Raiders picked him up off of waivers with the Patriots. But he is not from actually knowing. He does a lot of guessing. And so what happens when you guess wrong? Well, you give up touchdowns or you get burned and right. Big plays happen. And that's what happened with Jack Jones. Now you talk about EA. When he jumped a route because he knew what was coming. It wasn't a guess. It was, I know what's coming. I've seen this on film. I know exactly when this break is coming. And you know, and I've been running these routes myself. Like, so he did all that work. He put that extra work in to learn. And he really helped Charles Woodson become a Hall of Famer, too. Right? I mean, so he's done so much stuff. His career with the Eagles was fantastic, but I think that what he did with the Raiders and really being that guy across from C. Wood really helped him, his game, helped Charles Woodson's game and learn how to be a pro. And it also kind of solidified who EA was, because he's a guy that when the opposing quarterback didn't want to throw at Woodson, they were throwing EA's way. And EA was taking the ball the other way. Right? So, you know, he's a great guy, as you know. Like, and so, again, it's easy to root for dudes like that. He's fantastic. He's very humble. So I'm excited about him going into the Pro Football Hall of Fame, excited about his speech that we'll hear on Saturday, and just happy for a guy that I know really wanted this to solidify his career. Now he'll be a part of that exclusive club that is the Pro Football Hall of Fame there in Canton, Ohio.
Sounds good, Q. We appreciate you jumping on with us. I will see you out there tomorrow because I got to see – I believe we're going to get Laulu on the podium, so I want to make sure nice. I'm out there. Appreciate you jumping on with us, spending some time. Q Myers, make sure you check him out on Raider Nation Radio and his podcast. I'm sure you're going to be talking about some stuff, and he'll tweet out the link. So jump on with Q. Q, we will we'll talk to you soon. I'll see you tomorrow.
All right, brother. Pads are on again tomorrow, so it'll be fun.
Get yourself a burger.
See ya.
Now, back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Swing and a drive deep to left. He's done it four times.
What a magical night for the Big Amish. Smooth as butter, baby.
No need to ask. He's a smooth operator.
Did I hear Griff bring us a little Sade out of the Nick Kurtz?
Were you even alive when this came out, Griffin?
I should have been. Yes. I would have been dancing low in the club if this one was playing.
Wise beyond his ears. Years, not years.
Cofield and Company coming back at you as we head down the home stretch. Willie Ramirez along with Greg Salerno and Big Griff, man in the show. That was the sounds of A's rookie Nick Kurtz on that four home run night. We're going to talk a little A's here. Before we do that, let's get some scores out there. WNBA tonight, doubleheader going at the same time. So I don't know if that's a doubleheader, but staggered by an hour. Seattle coming off a loss goes into Connecticut. They're up by 23 late in the third, 76-53. They were laying 10.5 points. That total was 156.5. They got 129 on the board. It could get there, probably go over. Dallas, with Paige Bueckers back in the lineup. She took yesterday off against the Aces, and she's back in the lineup tonight. End of one, it's 31-19. They're actually into the second. It's 39-19. They opened the second quarter on an 8-0 run. They were 8-point home dogs, and they're up by 20 on the defending champion New York Liberty. Not sure what's going on with the Liberty, but they have been in a funk. Some baseball scores. Dodgers 3-1, top of the fifth in Cincinnati. Cubs, major NL Central showdown. Chicago in Milwaukee. Both teams tied for first in the Central, and the Cubs up early on the young kid. Jacob Mizorowski was on the hill. Bottom second, it's 3-0 Cubs. Scoreless, Marlins and Cardinals in the American League. Baltimore up on Toronto 7-4 in the bottom of the fifth. Yankees in a deadlock tie, 2-2, bottom fourth against the Rays. Greg's New York Yankees, he's shaking his head. And the Minnesota Twins are up 2-0 in or at home against Boston. There's some interleague play. Detroit up on Arizona 5-0. Philly and the White Sox tied 2-2. Royals up on the Braves 2-0. I'm not sure what's going on with the Braves. That franchise, Jesus, that team is really stinking it up. And finally, the Nationals and the Astros. Astros trying to shake that funk from getting swept by the A's. It is scoreless after or in the second inning. Speaking of those A's, so my colleague Mark Anderson, Associated Press, he wrote, he spent some time on a project, did a really good job on this. Headline, Tale of Three A's Cities. Oakland left behind, Sacramento a temporary stop, Las Vegas awaits. Really good story. I tweeted it out earlier. And really just about the three different cities and where they stand right now. Sacramento sort of embracing being the home of the Athletics. Oakland feeling left behind. But I guess the baseball fans in Oakland have sort of embraced the bees, as they're calling it, right? The Oakland bees have been a hit at Raimondi Park. Capacity around 4,000, complete with mascot Scrappy the Rally Possum. And nostalgic nods to Oakland at every turn. The Bees have somewhat given a little bit of breath of fresh air since the Golden State Warriors left for Frisco in 19 and the Raiders left, of course, for here in Vegas. Last month, the Oakland Ballers unveiled a mural honoring late Hall of Famer Ricky Henderson, who died in December at age 65. And then there's a soccer team in Oakland that's playing at the Coliseum. It's an interesting, you know, thought as far as three different cities involved right now as we speak, because the A's are still – or the Oakland community is still sort of feeling scarred.
Right.
Right? It's lost all of its professional – of its big professional teams. A WNBA team is now in Frisco – or San Francisco with the Golden State Valkyries. Sacramento is sort of reaping the benefits in Vegas, just sitting here with mounds of dirt where the Tropicana used to sit. Whether or not this team shows up or whether stadium is built, we don't know.
The Sacramento one is the one that kills me. I don't get it, because it'd be one thing if you were like, all right, Vegas is super hot. They don't have their stadium built yet. We're going to go somewhere cooler for a little while until they get ready. Sacramento is as hot as hell. I mean, it's basically Vegas weather out there. It's the same thing. It's a desert. I don't see what the difference is. Why couldn't they just be playing here outside somewhere then in some little stadium until they're ready? At least they'd be in Vegas. I don't understand the Sacramento thing. That it still baffles me. Like what the point of that is.
Well, I'm guessing that the ballpark, you know, them and Tampa Bay are playing in a AAA ballpark, but the problem is how do you share that time with the Aviators and manage that, right, when the schedule is probably in place, so you're not situated for that. I mean, I'm guessing I don't think that they could. There's no way that they're going to make Cashman Field available to them again, you know, as far as being able to do that. The next best thing would be probably CSN, the community college.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Nick Garitano and his crew, they're not going to be playing until, you know, December, January, getting things ready. But they're probably using the field, but they could have catered to them. It's not a lot of attendance. Bishop Gorman's baseball stadium, and then around town, as you mentioned. I think it makes sense just to sort of, I don't know, put a Band-Aid on the wound and keep things in the Bay Area. There's not a lot of, you know, you're packing up and what you're doing. I mean, and they were already situated right with the AAA ball club that was there. So
it just seems like a lot of wasted time to me, where they could be making inroads with the fans, because they're already going to have enough trouble, because a lot of people, again, we talked about this earlier, they're not rebranding the team. It's still the A's. So if you already have a team, you may not switch right over to another team just because they come to Vegas. So, I mean, I just feel like it, you know, they would already have their roots here maybe a little bit, but you're right. I guess maybe it wasn't, you know, feasible.
It was. I mean, yeah, it's the way that everything went down. I mean, the other place that they talked about was, could they pull off Reno? But the Reno has the Aces,
right?
Right. So their stadium's probably that would have been hard to manage.
Sure.
To, you know, sharing a baseball stadium with a team that needs 81 home games, and then your minor league teams needs X amount of games. So I don't know. That would have been a tough chore to pull off. I get what you're. It makes sense. Everything you're saying.
Right.
It's just a matter of pulling it off. It's a matter of, you know, when you look at Oakland, I mean, is that ever going to be a professional town again? Can it be?
You know, it's funny, because people always talk about they took our team. The best way to keep your team is to go to the games. And people just weren't going to the games. Now, you could say that facilities were gross or whatever, but I mean, if you don't show up to the games, they're not going to stay. That's just the way it goes. Expos happen. I mean, look at these teams, the Sonics and Seattle. I mean, they just weren't showing up, and it sucks that you lose your team, but you got to go to the games.
Yeah, and Mark, as Mark wrote, there were still, you know, back at the end of last year, people wearing different T-shirts, you know, or bringing signs. There were chants, sell the team,
right.
Toward in the final seasons in Oakland. And now, during a this is Mark's words in his story, during a recent Braves A series, two supporters showed up in Forever Oakland T-shirts, while another fan from Fresno arrived at Sutter Health Park wearing a Rooted in Oakland shirt. So it's kind of like you don't know how good you had it till it's gone. You don't know what you had till you lose it, and they lost the A's. And I would have to imagine that they thought this can't happen a third time. I don't know why.
Yeah. I know. You've seen your teams go all over the place. Right. Why wouldn't you think they would leave? But, yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know if Oakland is ever going to be able to get, you know, unless they also build up that area. You know, that's, I mean, I remember going up there with my son years ago in early 2000s, so 20 plus years ago, 2003, four-ish, two and three maybe, for a Taekwondo tournament, United States Olympic Taekwondo tournament, and at Berkeley.
Sure.
And I remember them telling us to take specific BART transportation from where we were staying because, you know, and it was going right by there. I remember going to the BART station by the Coliseum, but make sure you don't go off the wrong, up the wrong stairs or whatever, you know, or get off the wrong and get right to, you know, whatever, rent a car or this or that.
Yeah.
It was, so I mean, here we are 20 years later, and if it's still like that or worse. So one thing for sure is they if they're going to bring, you know, bring fans back or bring professional sports back, I would imagine they have to find an area in which it's going to be conducive.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, and you bring up a good point about facilities. I mean, if you have cats running around chasing rats all game and, you know, the guy's stealing second, but it's on the 30-yard line or whatever, you know, that kind of stuff, then I guess it does kind of hamper, you know, fan excitement, but it's got to go. You got you know, same thing with LA right now. I feel like the Chargers are in trouble already. I mean, they built this new stadium. You go there, the only thing that saves LA is there's so many fans there to watch the other teams. You know what I mean? Like, you know, they don't have that in Oakland, but like, or here with the Raiders, even you might see 90% Chiefs fans in a game or something. I'm over exaggerating, but you know, you'll see another team's fans, but at least the stadium's full.
Right.
I mean, if you don't fill the stadium, they're gonna leave.
And that's the big question. If this stadium gets built on the corner of Tropicana and Las Vegas Boulevard, can they fill the stadium? Can they get the fans in? Will they get tourists to fill up that stadium? You know, yes, it's hot. People, the very first thing that people aren't going to go in this heat, desert heat, 100 degrees. It's going to have a roof. Relax. It's going to be air conditioned. It's going to be, and I wonder if it's going to be so much of a tourist attraction. We're going to talk about something in a little bit about why Vegas has become a little less fun to visit. So I have to wonder as we see prices, you know, we still got a few years before the A's start their season here. So where are prices going to be now? I know concession prices, you know, around the three major sports that we have already are outrageous. I know people don't mind paying for some very good culinary dishes at the Aviators games. They have the concession standards, but they have some pretty good foods out there. I know that they invite the media out before every season to sort of try everything. But what kind of prices are we going to be looking at in 3 years?
Can you imagine? And not to pick up, I'm gonna pick up the team. I won't say who it was, but I was at a sports team here, you know, a professional sports game, and I went to go get a Jack and Coke, and she said, you know, what you can do is you can get a double for $5 more, and I'm like, well, that doesn't sound like a bad deal, so I get it, $42 for a double Jack and Coke. I'm like, what? So
that's,
it's
crazy.
For a single was 37? Like,
that's insane.
Yeah, I mean, I just, you know. 3 years from now, what are we going to – it's going to be $100?
When did you get here in Vegas?
I moved here in 2003-ish.
Okay, so I've told this story many a times.
Yeah.
86. I graduated school in May. 3 months later, I'm at the nightclubs. And there's a club on Flamingo in Orville. And I would pull out of the house by Spring Valley, go to the ATM, I'd pull $40 out. $20 would get folded up in a square and palmed to the head – basically, he was the general manager, the bouncer, or whatever. But he was like the general manager didn't mess with him. He was the guy. He was the man. And he kept an eye. First of all, he let me in past the line, and he would take care of me if there was a raid or, you know, because you're underage. But back then, the clubs were different. There were no hotel nightclubs. Right. So the $20 went to him. The other $20 lasted me the entire night because a tumbler, right? The glass, a tumbler, not a little glass, of a Long Island iced tea was $4. So then the extra dollar was a tip.
Yeah.
So there's $20, and we knew the tequila girl. So she and they had to buy their bottles, right? So to get toward the bottom, they could not turn in a bottle. And the only way they could buy a new one was to turn in an empty bottle and then use their tips and buy. And then at the end of the night, so you're talking like if they were buying the bottle for $40, but they were making $150 on the bottle. But they would always come up to me and my boys, or whatever. Yeah. Hey, we need to finish it. So we were drinking tequila for free. You're drinking four Long Islands a night.
Yeah.
It's $40 to get out. That wouldn't even cover your double Jack and Coke.
It's insane. And you don't even have to go that far back. I remember, do you remember the original O'Shea's before they changed it over?
Yes.
And now it's like a different place. But we used to go in there and you would sit there and you would start playing video poker, walk away, go to the bathroom, come back. Never charge you for a drink the entire night. By the time we left, we're toasted off $8.
Cofield and Company presents Grab Bag on ESPN Las Vegas.
Stick your hand in there, dude.
All right, it is Cofield and Company. We bring it down to the home stretch, the final stretch. Willie Ramirez, Greg Salerno, Griffin on the wheels of steel, as I like to say. Quick shout out, too, by the way, to our guest today, Doug Feinberg, AP, talking WNBA. Steve Kim joins us every Monday. Taylor Rocha from Channel 13, looking forward to making her a part of Cofield and Company in terms of frequent guest talking everything Las Vegas sports. And, of course, Q Myers from Raider Nation Radio and our fearless leader talking Raiders. Jump in there again.
Stick your hand in there, Dave.
So.
I don't know why. It just made me laugh.
Steve does that, so I figured I better do that.
Right? You got something to say about the grab bag there, Greg?
That's fine.
I read this headline, and it ties into what we were just talking about. This is from MarketWatch.com.
Yeah.
Vegas is not fun anymore. $9 cups of coffee and pricier rooms are steering travelers away from the vacation mecca. They're not lying.
They're not. They're not at all, and it's been happening for a while. I think it started, people really started freaking out with the parking and then the, you know, $9.99 buffets. First they were $3.99, then they were, you know, $9.99. Now they're $100 some of these buffets, $99. I mean, if you're coming to Vegas, it used to be a cheap visit and maybe you'd lose some money on gambling, but that was it. Now you got to come here. It's like going to Manhattan or something.
Well, and the lead is, for decades, Las Vegas was considered a destination of bargains galore, offering 99-cent shrimp cocktails, $10 steak dinners, and shows that cost no more than the price of a drink. Those days are long gone. Instead, think $9 cups of coffee, $100 a person buffet spreads, and a movie ticket that can set you back a whopping $279. Now, they're obviously talking about a family.
Sure.
Go a family of four, maybe, right? Because you're talking concessions and the movie tickets themselves. I remember those days. I just brought up previously going to the nightclubs, and we'd walk out of there at 5, 6 in the morning, and you could go get steak and eggs for $2.49. And I don't mean a thin slab. I'm talking about New York steak and eggs at some places. There used to be a place, this little dive bar on Valley View called The Lift.
Yeah.
And you'd walk in, and you literally see, like, the plumbing, the pipes in the middle of the room, and video poker slots just sitting in the middle. If it would rain, it would just drip through.
Right.
And they had this little window, like a grease like a greasy spoon. You walk up to the window. They had the KC steak special, $4.99, steak, baked potato, salad, and a drink, meaning a soda. We would be, and this was back in the days before cell phones, so we'd all be like, get everybody on a three-way. Okay, Greg, you call me. Okay, now you call Griffin. Okay, Griffin, you use your three-way. You call Cofield. Okay, Cofield, you use your, and call Adam. And then all of a sudden you have 5, 6 people on a party line, and then all of a sudden you look up and it was midnight. So everybody meet at the Lift. I mean, it costs $5 just to drive across the street now.
Sure. Yeah, it's unbelievable. Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Why do you think that is? And I have a theory, because now, I know some of it is international tourism, and there's political things involved with some of this stuff, and there's other money involved with some of this stuff, but One of the theories I have is the gambling. I mean, dude, I drove to Palm Springs. It's a casino just sitting there now. You go to L.A., you drive 20 minutes and get to a casino. You go to Atlantic City, you know, I mean, anywhere you want to go now, there's gambling everywhere. Is it because Vegas doesn't have the revenue from the gambling anymore, so they're trying to make it up in other areas, and they just don't want to tell us? It's like...
Well, the cost of everything that they're putting up, these monstrosities, right, all over the place.
Yeah.
And the cost, like, we were just talking off the air about DJs. You asked me how long I DJed, right?
Right.
And I did mobile DJ work. Now, back in the day, it was like $75 an hour, and then every additional hour, $50, whatever it was, right? And, I mean, you'd walk out of a wedding, and you'd be content with, like, a $500, $600 night.
Sure.
It's, I mean, you're not being booked for a wedding DJ. It's you're looking at $2,000 alone,
yeah.
Right? So, I mean, in reality, with prices of things going up, and I think the market drives things up. So you look around town and you see all these things that are going up. It's that's the price of things. I mean, Steve and I talked about this last week. I think it was. I said one of the things that I kicked myself with. I know that I've in my younger days with running the streets and the street hustles that we had going on.
Sure.
I know I had 10K sitting around at one point. I mean, you know, just from whatever, in cash, in a shoebox.
Right.
You could buy parcels of land for 10K way out where when there was nothing, like on Ann. And,
yep.
And the 95 was a two-lane road.
Yeah.
And there were no street lights.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember when you got to Smoke Ranch, and from there, it was pitch black. The only way you knew the Cheyenne exit was coming off was there was a Wendy's. It's still there. That was how you knew that off-ramp was coming. So you could buy land for 10K.
Yeah.
And 30 years later, they were selling it for $1 million.
Ugh.
I mean,
yeah.
At one point, if I had an extra 25K sitting around and I could have turned that in if I'd have known. So you think about now what these properties are worth, what they're paying to build it. You know, I mean, the Mirage was known as the very first resort to be in Las Vegas when that went up, and the Volcano, and that was a big deal. And then it just grew and grew and grew. So I think they're covering their costs, but also the market's driving it. If they're going to pay it, they're going to charge it.
Yeah.
So you got parking fees, you got resort fees, you got stadiums going up where taxes are being put on that, and then that's being paid.
That's a great point.
So, I mean, there's all these fees. I mean, and the one thing that's suffering are the locals in some capacity. Maybe that's why locals get mad and they say, well, you know, these stadiums and this and that. No, it's not coming out of their pocket per se, but at the same time, there's other fees and everything that are benefiting. And that's why they want some of these taxes and these fees to go toward education.
Yeah, well, that's what they said they were going to do with the marijuana. Remember,
right.
they legalized marijuana.
Yep.
They have all this tax revenue coming in. They're supposed to help the teachers and education with it. And apparently none of that money went there. I don't know where it went. But
back in the back?
Stick your hand in there, Dave.
Are we going back in the back? So I don't know if you saw this story last week. And I don't know if Steve touched upon it. I put it on and we didn't touch on it. But
yeah.
There was a Little Leaguer, because we got the Little League World Series coming up. But did you see this Little Leaguer who did a bat flip?
I didn't see him do it. I saw the story about it afterwards.
Right.
Yeah.
And they originally were suspending him, but then they turn around and the big league players, by the way, they sided with the Little Leaguers.
Of course.
But they reversed it and made the kid eligible. I mean, smack the kid on the wrist within the game, but you're going to suspend him? I mean, come on.
To me, that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
It'd be one thing if he threw it at somebody or he was rude to somebody or yelled at the dugout or... Flipping your bat and celebrating because you did something good? I mean, what the hell is that?
I saw this. I mean, it's one of the greatest things to watch every single year is the Little League World Series, right? And I know that there's Southern Nevada representation, and now we've had two teams go to Cooperstown, so you hate to see the kids punished, but I mean, you know, a bat flip, it's not that. I don't think it's that big of a deal that they needed. This needed to be blown out of proportion.
And baseball is the only sport that does that, by the way. Every other sport, you can dance and do whatever you want and have fun.
Yeah.
Baseball,
celebration,
for some reason, has all
dances,
these rules.
Right.
Yeah.
I just watched the flag football championships, the NFL flag football, the boys and the girls, because we had a team out there. We had a few teams out there. The celebratory dances that were taking place, it's right in your face. So, anyway, Greg, appreciate you. Great job. I'll be on with you Wednesday, the arena. Make sure you check him out. Griff, appreciate you. We are back tomorrow. It is myself, Danny Smythe. This is going to be a blast. I can't wait to do a show with Danny, WNBA sports betting. Thanks for tuning in. We're back tomorrow.